Show 2 of Off-Season Radio. My name's Paige Cardona and I'm joined by the boys again, Matt Joyce.
How's everyone?
And Damon Jackman.
Hey.
How are we going, guys?
Yeah, not too bad. Shattered from the weekend. Richmond lost. Shut up, Damon.
I seriously felt your pain. That was pretty hard.
Pretty awful. Yeah.
Well, look, how do you think I feel?
Yeah, well,
worse.
Porter a good team, though.
Full credit to them. They were fantastic. I'm stoked for them, and that just means that Collingwood can clear out some dead wood, which is what they've done today.
Started.
But look, we'll just jump straight into it. We have an interview straight up with Cameron Giles, who's joined us from Woodville West Torrens, and he had some great things to say to us.
Okay, so we're joined here by Cameron Giles from Woodville West Torrens in South Australia. How you doing, Cameron?
Yeah, good, thanks. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. Firstly, congratulations on your invite to the National Combine. How have you taken the news there?
Yeah, it caught me a bit off guard to start off with. Didn't think I'd get as far as I have this year, but obviously it'd be a great experience. Obviously being with the best players around Australia at the Combine, so it should be good.
Yeah, and you played a really vital role for South Australia there in the first championship since the competition was reformatted. What's it been like playing for SA this year and taking home the title after players, before you've gone agonisingly close in the past years?
Yeah, it was a fantastic experience to play with the best players in South Australia, and we've all grown pretty close with mates, so it's been good with that. Obviously taking home the title for the first time since 1995 was a bonus, and yeah, it was a great experience to go over to Melbourne. All other states. I think went to 5 different states in the end. So yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah, and you're from a town called Clare, which I'm actually my grandma's from there, so I know you quite well. And it's about 2 hours away from where you go to Year 12 there at Prince Alfred College. How have you found living away from home and taking on more responsibilities? And do you think that might serve you better if you were, say, drafted interstate?
Yeah, definitely. I think this is my third year down at boarding school at Prince Alfred College, so. To start with, it was a bit daunting leaving school when I was 15. So yeah, I reckon it would definitely help me. Say if I do get drafted into state, but yeah, being around my mates all the time in the boarding house it'll definitely help with that. Mm.
And you're actually a head prefect at Prince Alfred. And can you tell us about what that role sort of entails and how you've taken on that responsibility?
Yeah, obviously there was about a group of 12 of us prefects that help out the younger kids just like develop into their environment and make it a bit easier for them. So me and another prefect just head the sporting activities here in the boarding house. So we just take control of that and just give them some co-curricular activities to do after school. And so, yeah.
And you've been playing alongside some other notable players for Woodville West Torrens over the last couple of years. Jimmy Tumpus, Manny McDonough, and alongside you this year is Luke Dunstan and Riley Knight. And what has it sort of been like playing alongside those types of players, especially Tumpus and McDonough, who've gone to the draft and have been successfully drafted before as well?
Yeah, obviously they're really very rated players, and obviously they've been drafted to AFL clubs, so... Yeah, obviously, just you listen to their guidance and you just take on board what they say so you can develop your own game. And obviously, Riley Knight and Luke Dunstan are both from Clare as well, so I've grown up and played all my footy with them through all my junior career. So being a part of the state stuff and everything with them has been a great experience, and we'll cherish that for a long time, I think.
And on your own game, look, I think you're a bit out of the box. Now, I've seen you ruck. I've seen you play forward. You've held down a lockdown position down back. You've played as a rebounding defender and gone onto a wing. Can you tell us more about your game style and, I guess, what type of role you think that you're best suited to?
Yeah, obviously, I see myself as a sort of a rebounding tall defender, but due to my size, I think it's probably pretty important I develop my lockdown role a bit more. This is my first year playing defence, so in previous years I've been playing ruck and forward, so it's been a bit different playing down back this year, but I've loved every minute of it, and obviously the guidance of Brendan Phillips and Malcolm Ellis through the state program and Shane Grimm at Woodville West Torrens, being able to enhance my role as a defender. So yeah, I really like to get in the rebound game and push up the ground a bit to use my attacking game.
And you had some big jobs during the national championships, especially against Max Hayes, Dallas Willsmore, and Jake King. And you got the better of all three. What was that experience like for you, especially playing that defensive role there?
Yeah, those three players are obviously they're pretty rated and they're good players. Obviously, playing on their resting ruckman a lot was a bit bit different because they're a bit bigger than me on some occasions. But I really like the lockdown role, and I've never played it before, so it's been a really good experience. But obviously, coming up against the best players is a really big learning experience, and I'll only get better from it from other experiences to come. So that was great.
And you've managed to average a whopping 22 disposals as a defender. Now, I've seen you play where you've played as a lockdown defender, a high possession winning rebounder, and even up forward where you've been known to kick a few goals. Do you think your versatility is your biggest asset, and you know, given the way that the game is changing?
Yeah, obviously being versatile is a pretty big aspect of the game in the modern era. So, yeah, being able to play just whatever the coach wants to suit their requirements and game style. So whether that be playing tall or small during the game is a pretty big asset to my game. And, so the rebounding game has been, I've used that a lot through Woodville this year. And obviously playing school, I've had to play forward and ruck. So, yeah, I think just being versatile is just, a pretty big asset to my game.
And given your strengths as an attacking big man who can play a variety of roles all over the ground, what do you think is your biggest weakness at this stage and something that you feel as though you need to work on?
Yeah, obviously this year being my first in defence, just locking down and not losing touch with my opponents has probably been my biggest weakness so far. But all the extra work I've been doing and the voice and guidance from all my different coaches has been good, and I reckon I'm improving that every time I play it. So, yeah, probably just locking down and losing touch with my opponents probably my biggest weakness.
And which current AFL player would you compare your style of football to?
Probably Harry Taylor. I think he's pretty versatile and goes forward or back. Obviously, I try and emulate his spoiling pressure and his rebounding game as well. So, yeah, I liken myself to Harry Taylor a little bit.
Yeah, you'd love to replicate your game after him. He's such a talented footballer. And lastly, which team do you follow in the AFL?
Yeah, I go for Geelong. I'm back for them all my childhood. So, yeah, it's good to... Unfortunately, they lost to Freo on the weekend, but hopefully they can get through and get to the grand final again.
Great. Thanks so much for joining us, Cameron. All the best during the final series with Woodville, and we'll hopefully hear your name called out on draft day.
Yeah, hopefully. Thank you. Thanks for having
me. Great. Thanks again, Cam. And that was Cameron Giles from Woodville West Torrens. He's a fantastic talent, and fingers crossed he gets over the line on draft day. But we're going to jump right into the review of the Western Bulldogs, who I thought had a pretty good year considering what they started with. 8 wins, 14 losses, and finished 15th on the ladder, you know, with a percentage of 85%, which is probably about par for where they finished.
In the second half of the year, they were scary to come up against because... You never knew what they were going to do. They stopped a few clubs from getting into the eight, in my opinion.
You're very right. And look, I mean, on that form travelling in 2013, look, they started off with a bang, didn't they? They beat the Brisbane Lions, big margin to start off with, and the Lions won the pre-season premiership, which was pretty incredible, that form. But you know what? They had to wait 2 months before they won their second game, and they basically went into the bye. They won the two games leading into the bye, which was fantastic. But... look, they had that extreme purple patch towards the later end of the year. Significant development achieved across the board. I think they really turned the corner this year under Macca. And they won a total of 8 games in 2013, up from 5 in 2012. And they'll probably enter 2014. And Macca said at their best and fairest last Friday night that they now have got to rank themselves with that next cluster of teams pushing towards the top eight. So... Yep. I don't think it's top eight's exactly thereabouts for them, but I think they'd be looking to probably match what they've achieved this year and perhaps close the gap on those big losses that they had at the start of the year. I think for them that'd be the real development side, is closing the gap on those losses, being more competitive for a longer period of time and probably winning the same, if not one or two more games, up to about 10. But... the big improvements, the kids really started to take ownership of the side. The midfield brigade... particularly for me, really started to shine through. Tim Liberatore, how stiff is he to miss All-Australian? Was the number one clearance player during the year.
Tim Liberatore or Tom?
Tom Liberatore. Why did I say Tim? Jeez.
Either way, he's highly impressive.
And obviously, first year, Stringer, Hunter, Hrovat and McRae, they all showed signs that the Bulldogs midfield is going to be very, very scary in a few years' time. Obviously, Jared Grant, I mean, he's come from out of the clouds. He had a spectacular... end of the year. They've finally found that potential they knew he always had. And if he can continue 2014 where he left off this year, then I think they've got the answer to their forward woes. But and Will Minson, All-Australian right there, fantastic year. But look, on a statistical point of view, they were beaten by Carlton West Coast by a combined 122 points in the first half of the year. They came back and beat them in the second half of the year whilst maintaining a 110-point scoring average, which is up there with the top four sides of the competition. Mm. Yep. So when you look at that, there is so much to take out of that year for them. But look, on a struggle straight point of view, losses to the Gold Coast and Melbourne were probably watershed moments for them. That was a pretty low period in time for them this year. But you know what? The public whacking probably got them into gear because we saw how strong they finished the year. But injuries to Tom Williams again. Clay Smith had that ACL. Sean Higgins, I'm just praying for the day that he can actually string together a full season because he's never been able to do that yet. Obviously, Matty Boyd... injured throughout the year with a calf, and Daniel Cross was in and out of the side and unfortunately got delisted. But that probably is a sign of where the club's heading.
Yeah, the senior players didn't have the best run with it, honestly. There were only a couple that really had a good run. Robert Murphy would be one of them. Ryan Griffin,
those sorts of guys. Luke Dalhouse had an exceptional year. But
I think it was just bad luck for Daniel Cross with their, you know, midfield coming through. You know, mentioned Liberatore and... who's the other one?
Mitch Wallace.
You know, and they got Griffin there as well. I think that's probably their strongest part of their side that's coming through. And you know, it's just unfortunate for Cross.
And Clay Smith was in fantastic form before he went down with the knee, so that really stung them too. But look, looking forward to the trade and free agency period, I think that like identifying some areas in which they definitely need. Look, there's a couple of areas they really lack. And I mean lack a small forward, a legitimate small forward that is going to be elusive and creative. And they really lack a gun key forward, I reckon, too.
They've got Gio for one more year, though. I think they said in an interview mid-year that he was basically going to retire and enjoy coaching next year. That was straight from the coach. But you saw his second half of the year. It was absolutely fantastic.
Somebody like that you've got to keep on. Mm. He was just so... he was monumental for them. And look, he's 32, 33. He still plays as if he's 20, 26. Yeah. So and
he would be the perfect person to teach a new small forward, for example.
Exactly,
And as the sub, he can actually be that sort of playing coach role, which would be perfect for what the Dogs need.
And, I mean, looking at who they could probably be looking at this trade period now, it's no secret that they've made a big offer to Essendon's Stuart Cramery, and we'll see how that one plays out because there's still a bit of a question mark hanging over the heads of Essendon players and whether or not they'll be able to play next year. But, I mean, as well as Cramery, Gumbleton, they tried to get last year and he signed on, but he's only on a one-year deal for the rest of his career. Essendon Football Club have only promised to give him one-year deals at a time because he's just been so unpredictable with injuries. So they could probably entice him over on a two-year to three-year deal, give him some,
security,
in his career. But someone who I really like are the Bulldogs, and it's probably Jackson Payne. Mm. Now, it's sort of a... be interesting saying that given I am a Collingwood supporter, but Jacko's probably had, well, he has actually had no opportunity this year. He's been quite good at VFL level. He needs to probably continue to develop that defensive side of his game. I don't think he'll stay on, but the Bulldogs in their own due diligence should be looking to price someone like that away. He fits the mould and that age group of sort of the Bulldogs would be looking forward to bringing into the next finals campaign. He'd fit right in there. But another one as well, Paddy Karnezis, he's been spoken about, but it looks like Collingwood is probably his preferred destination going on recent reports. But someone who I really think fits this club to a T, your boy, Robbie Nahas.
Yeah, I'll take get it, take it.
You know what, chips. I think, look, Robbie Nahas up in the Bulldogs forward line is able to then release Dalhouse into more of a winger. Now, he's got the speed, he's got that evasiveness, the creativity, he's got that X factor, and I think Dal is probably wasted if he's playing too much of a forward role. He has that aerobic capacity to move into the midfield now, especially off a wing. Now, if he's going to get fed out the ball from the guys like Wallace, Liberatore, those types, and be released on a run, and we know what he's like when he takes off on a couple of bounces, it would just be so much for their structure. So someone like him I could really see there, but you probably look at what they've got to give up.
Third rounder.
They have probably nothing. I'd say that they don't really have any surplus players.
Yeah.
There's not one position they really, I guess, have a lot of depth in, which is probably where their downfall is probably going to be. I mean, maybe someone like Christian Howard hasn't come on as they probably would have anticipated he has over the last couple of years. Sean Higgins, with injury issues, he could be a target for other clubs.
He's a free agent, though, isn't he?
He is, yeah. Yep. And he hasn't signed on yet, and the Bulldogs would probably be, I guess, content to see him go because they haven't really... It's not like he's played every week.
Mm.
So if he was, it'd probably be a different thing altogether. But we know what he's like when he's fit and up and running.
Yeah.
But, I mean, added to him... You know, Cooney re-signed as well, so they'd be pretty stoked about that because he found some Brownlow form towards the end of the year too. But there's no really major players that have been, I guess.
One I was thinking of that came to mind, Addison.
Yeah.
He's thereabouts. I mean, he's no superstar, bit part player. He might be, you know, he is expendable, I think. He's at that age, you know, he's not super young, not super old.
I'd say so. I reckon his last 2 months of the season's probably allowed him to stay on at least another year. The great thing about the Bulldogs forward line for mine is they're very unconventional. They're not your typical flashy forward line. And, you know, guys like him, Jason Tutt, Jones, they're able to get the job done, but without that fanfare associated with, say, a Collingwood forward line, a Hawthorn forward line, an Essendon forward line.
Yeah, it's more of like how the hell did they just score rather than, oh, wow, that was a great goal. You know, that
exactly.
Sort of,
look, they take their opportunity, and I really like that about their forward line. It almost brings about a bit of unpredictability about them, which is, to their credit, quite good. And look, I'd probably say if you're talking about a couple of trade scenarios, look, the Bulldogs would probably be happy to part ways with their second overall pick, so which at this stage would be about pick 24, which last year would actually be a first-round selection.
Yeah, and who would this be for Cramery?
I reckon it's probably going to be for Cramery. I wouldn't also be surprised to see them to utilise that and bring in another player within the age group that they're sort of looking at. But I'm probably of the belief, unless they're going to offer that up for Cramery, they're better keeping it, I'd say. Just because the talent this year in the draft, it probably extends to a good 35. I'm a massive rap for the top 35, but after there, it probably gets a bit thin. Looking at that, they might target someone like a James Battersby if he's around. They might target someone like a Jarman Impey if he's there as well. And then, of course, for me, like we're about to speak to in the podcast later on, Mitch Harvey at pick 24, that's where he's going to be. And at 197 centimetres, 96 kilos, a Kurt Tippett type, why would you not utilise that draft pick and bring in a freshly faced 18-year-old who is AFL ready to play as soon as next year?
Yeah.
That's just for me. And I'd say, apart from in the draft, they got pick four? Pick four.
Yes.
Pick four in the draft. So guys like James Kelly, Jack Billings, Matt Schoenberg going to be around that mark. I mean, you get different things with all three. I mean, Kelly's a two-way elite runner, sublime skills akin to Scott Pendlebury. You've got Billings, who's probably the most classiest forward after Tom Boyd. Just a different kind of forward. Very much a flanker, but he goes in the midfield. He just he's a freak. If you've seen him play, you know what he's capable of. But and also Schoenberg, he's the closest thing to Brendan Goddard. He plays every position. He's got elite marking, elite kicking, elite vision. He could possibly push for number one.
I think that's what, if they could get Schoenberg, I think that'd be perfect for the Dogs.
He solves a lot of problems because he plays such a variety of roles. And I think if you're going to, they've delisted Lukas Markovic as well in defence, probably was thereabouts. But on that perspective, they need to bring in some serious key tools that are going to impact straight away next year.
Yep.
And look, speaking of Luke Reynolds, we're going to speak to him next, coming up on off-season radio.
So we're joined now by half forward Luke Reynolds from Port Adelaide. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, really well, thank you.
And I'll kick it off. Firstly, congratulations on your invitation to the National Combine. How have you taken the news?
Thanks a lot. Look, it's probably, for me, a reward for the whole year, sort of the hard work you put in and all the training you do and all the matches you play. It's sort of a bit of a reward and, really excited.
I was incredibly pleased with your athleticism and terrific turn of speed for South Australia at the National Champs. How did you find yourself on the big stage this year?
Well, firstly, thanks. for me this year in the Nationals, it was just about playing my role and sort of assisting and working together with the two other key forwards up there, Mitch Harvey and Darcy Hourigan. So, you know, it was just more of a lead up and get up and mark the ball and, you know, kick it inside 50, try and find a target and try and get some goals.
And you've got a pretty strong kicking game, and it seems to be one of your biggest strengths. Is it something that you've really worked hard on over the years?
Yeah, probably. For starters, I probably was probably gifted that talent in my junior days. I've always had sort of a good left foot kick, but you know, it's something that I really pride myself on. And if I, you know, sort of try and aim to hit every target at training, and yeah.
And in 2012, you played 11 reserves games for the Maggies over there and just a handful of Maccas Cup games. And how did you feel about that senior experience against the bigger bodies in reserves football as opposed to the under 18 competition?
Yeah, look, it was a great experience. You know, the first time you go up and play senior footy, you know, it's a bit daunting and it takes a while to get used to the bigger bodies and they hit a lot harder and it's a lot faster as well, but you know, it's definitely different in some aspects to under 18s, but you know, you get used to it pretty quickly and you find your feet.
And you had a pretty good season with those 11 games, and on the back of that, you were awarded as the most promising player for the under 18s at Port. That must have been pretty encouraging, especially considering you played more senior football than junior football that year.
Yeah, look, it was a pretty big honour, especially for a club like Port Adelaide. You know, there's been some pretty outstanding juniors that have come through. So, you know, I was really thrilled and stoked to, you know, be presented with that. But, yeah, look, you know, it was obviously a big honour and pretty proud of it, yeah.
And on the back of that, you were selected as part of the AFL-AIS squad and travelled overseas with the team earlier in the year. What was the experience like for you, not only travelling overseas, but working closely with the likes of Michael O'Loughlin?
Yeah, that was great. I mean, that's probably done a lot for my football and not probably not only football, but me as a person. And, you know, that experience was a life experience and it was priceless, really. I mean, you know, getting to mix around with Mickey O, as you said, and Brad Johnson and Ty Kennelly, blokes like that. You learn a lot from them and you learn how they've become such successful athletes.
And what do you think was the biggest thing that you learned from that experience?
For me, it was probably the professionalism and just the amount of work required to get to that level and succeed.
And like between school, family, and football, has the biggest challenge this year been just, you know, juggling everything and being sure that you stay on top of not only your football but your family life and your school life as well?
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, that's probably one of the biggest challenges I face, and I wouldn't be surprised if others face that as well. So, you know, it's always tough juggling, you know, schoolwork, uni work, with friends, family, and then being able to play football. There's a lot of pressure on you to succeed at all levels. So,
yeah, and back to football. You've been trialled around the ground, you know, in the midfield and down back. How do you feel that's complemented your game as a forward?
I suppose playing up the ground more and down the other end more, you know, it gives you a different perspective on the game. As a forward, you're always sort of got the game in front of you, the game's unfolding in front of your eyes, and you're under the control of others down the field. But I suppose when you're down back or through the midfield, you've got more control of what the ball does, especially when the ball's in your hands. But yeah,
and you've got, you know, great athleticism, a great kick, strong hands. But what would you say your biggest weakness is in your game, and something you'd need to work on if you got drafted to AFL level?
Probably my biggest weakness would have to be my tackling and second and third efforts. And it's something I've been working on for a while now, and it's taken a while to slowly get better, but things are coming along quite well, so yeah.
Yep, and if you had to compare yourself to a current AFL player, who would that be?
I suppose it's a tough one, but I've discussed it with a few people. I sort of play in a similar role to a maybe a Jack Gunston up forward or something like that as that third tall, but I reckon Jack Gunston.
Yeah, cool. And last but not least, who do you follow currently in the AFL?
I'm an Adelaide boy, so I support the Crows.
Ah, that's good. Well, just missed out on finals this year. Hopefully, if you get drafted to them, you'll be able to change that.
Yeah, it was a disappointing year, but there's always next year.
Yeah, exactly.
Great. Thanks so much for joining us, Luke. We really appreciate it. And hopefully your name is called out on draft day, because my fingers are crossed for you.
No worries. Anytime, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thanks again.
And that was Luke Reynolds from Port Adelaide we were speaking to there. And now we're kicking off the other list assessment, which is Gold Coast. Now, starting off with how they went in 2013. So massive improvers, of course. 2012, they finished with 3 wins in 17th position. This season, they finished in 14th spot with 8 wins, equal with the Dogs. And by mid-season, a lot of people were talking about them being smokies for the top eight. Of course, they're probably never likely to get there, but was good to see that they were spoken about that highly, and really does show that they had an awesome season. Now, where do they make improvements? Well, they made massive inroads, just in terms of the teams that they beat. They knocked off Collingwood, North Melbourne, as well as, I guess, equally as developed sides as themselves, with St Kilda and the Dogs as well, which was pretty impressive. In terms of their players, now I'll speak of Jaeger Amir in a tick, but Dion Prestia is one of their most developed players, been there from the start. You know, he's come on in leaps and bounds and probably is their best performer throughout the year behind Gary Ablett. And upped his disposal rate from 25.5 disposals a game in 2013, up from 19 last year. Pretty impressive numbers there. And now Jaeger Amir, of course, came into the system first year in the top level, and seems as though like he's been playing for years on end.
Yeah. He's a first name player now. He's on par now with Gary.
Yeah. Yes.
And with Chris.
First name basis.
First name basis.
I just call him Taylor Lautner because he looks exactly like him. He does. Yeah. Twilight guy.
Oh, he does a bit, actually, yeah. Exactly. That's a fair point.
Oh, he's got the abs as well.
I don't look at the abs.
Yeah, guilty.
Nothing below the head. And, yes, it went on to win the Rising Star, of course, and looks to be a superstar of the future. Other player was Tom Nichols, really caught the eye, came on and filled the rucking void left by Zach Smith, who went out injured I think it was early rounds of the season. And it looks really impressive, and it's really encouraging to see that they've got the rucking stocks there and the depth if a player does go down. Now, where they struggled, it's hard to say where they struggled. I guess they did in terms of their injuries to key players. They lost Zach Smith, of course, just said, and injured his knee. And only played 8 matches. Nathan Bock was another one, mature age player, restricted to only 2 games after coming back from a broken leg. Brandon Matera, suffered an ankle injury. And when I was looking through the list, I was thinking, where was he? Because I didn't even realise that he was actually out. But he was out for the year after round 11, and lost big man Tom Lynch, which I think hit them for 6 when they lost Dixon as well. Lost real firepower down forward there. When he injured his PCL. You can talk of them in terms of, they're a developing side. They're only in the third year in the system. And, expectations weren't too high. So, I think considering that they actually did meet expectations and probably exceeded them as well, and should be pushing for the top 8 next season. What do you reckon?
I'm scared.
Yeah, I think they're going to go to the next level next year. I love Trent McKenzie's development this year and Guy McKenna using him off a back flank. And I reckon he's going to be the next big thing
and
out of that
club. Dixon's had a sensation.
Charlie Dixon's come from the clouds.
Yep.
So you've got a lot to look forward to.
Kicked their first goal in their history.
Yeah, he did. Yep.
That's a trivia question if you ever get asked
that. And Matera kicked their very first point.
Ah, very good.
Sorry, there you go. That's my input.
But what do you think they could trade in?
First, before I get to that, looking forward to next year, they've got Jack Martin, of course, coming in, highly rated youngster.
God.
Could have gone number one this season is being compared to Gary Ablett, which I think is incredible because you can't compare any player to Gary Ablett.
Can you imagine they're going to have Martin, O'Meara and Ablett in the one midfield?
Yep, and then they've got Bunnell and Swallow.
Jesus.
It is rather scary. And he played 10 games in the NE AFL this season and development year like Jager O'Meara in his first season. Mm. Now, looking forward to trade and free agency. Now, they are in desperate need of a key forward, I think. You know, they can't rely on Lynch and Day too much. You know, they're still developing and they're, you know, second, third year in the system. And they're too reliant on Campbell Brown. I think, you know, he is a defender. He was thrown forward. They needed him there to kick goals. And the fact that Gary Ablett, he ended up being their top goal scorer for the season, which is incredible in itself. But, you know, it says that they do need a key forward. Apart from the key forward, they do need a key defender as well, I think. You know, Warnock's down there, but he's no superstar. Mm. You know, he's a trier, battler. And the other player, I think, which has been, he's been mighty impressive, is Rory Thompson. Mm. He's taken quite a few scalps, and for a young player, he's very impressive. And Bock as well, you know, he has been injury prone. And, you know, with a broken leg, you can't expect him to come back and set the world on fire. So they'd be looking to fill those both of those key posts come the trade period and free agency. And the players that they could be looking at. Now, I had a look through, and I was looking at Essendon's rumoured mass exodus, or, you know, a few players that are looking to walk out in the club. And it's been rumoured that Paddy Ryder may be among them. Mm-hmm. So I think he may be one to look at, just in terms of more as a forward than in terms of a ruckman, along with Bell Chambers, I think, of course. I've got to throw him in the mix. With,
imagine if they got them, that'd be ridiculous.
Jesus,
that'd be good. That'd
it
be good.
Would be, yeah, it'd be massive.
Other players looking at Jack Watts, maybe, but don't know if he'd go there. Del Santo, I think, in terms of just adding a bit of experience, firepower in the middle, he might come on the cheap. Daniel Cross, he'll definitely come on the cheap. I think he'd be an awesome fit there.
Would he want to move out of Victoria though?
Not to Gold Coast. I don't think they need him. They've got a great midfield already. I think if Cross goes anywhere, it'll be Melbourne, and that's it.
I think you'll get more game time at Melbourne, definitely. But as a depth player, even at Gold Coast, I think if Melbourne don't offer a spot to him, then he may consider it. But you're right. I reckon he'd definitely want to go to Melbourne first. Mm. Another player I thought of was, as a restricted free agent, Ben Rutten.
Yeah, possible.
Did he sign at Adelaide?
Has he signed it?
Possibly 1 year, I think he was signed. It? Just
I
a
think,
1 year deal.
I think he signed a 1 year.
Oh, there you go. That's thrown out the window. And just in terms of players they can offer up at the trade table, hard to really think of any players, but Jared Brennan, they've got to get rid of him for something.
They're not going to get anything for
him. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, he and Michael Riscatelli, for mine, I just can't see them really adding anything to this side anymore.
I was reading Big Footy and had quite the chuckle because someone suggested that they trade him in for a can of Coke, even if it's empty, which is probably a fair call. But you'd only trade in for a can of Coke if you're thirsty, though.
It's rough.
Yeah. trade bait, I think, on a more sensible note, David Swallow.
He was
one, a spanner in the works. He hasn't come on, but he has been injured, I know. He was one that I think may attract interest from North. Now, Paige, you're jumping out of your skin.
Chomping at the bit. What are you
I have heard this. I have heard very wholeheartedly that North Melbourne are trying to move heaven and earth to get Swallow to join his brother at North. And that doesn't surprise me that you fought him up there.
Yeah.
It's just maybe a bit of a coincidence. I can't see them looking to part ways with the number one pick. He's been injured this year. He's been trialled off half back. He hasn't really had the continuity this year to probably say that he's out the door. But
What would North give up? I mean, Robbie Tarrant, I think, wants to leave. Well, not wants to leave, but they've got a surplus there. But that's not enough for Swallow.
I think North are a hard, honest team. But I don't believe they've got any serious player that they can afford to lose or that they want to lose to lure him back or lure him to North.
What about that midfield? Andrew Swallow, they could trade him and then that'd be perfect.
I mean, they'd just defeat the purpose, wouldn't it?
Get the younger one. That's all you want.
Yeah. You suggested...
You can't trade the captain for the number one pick. It just doesn't work.
Sure
like
you
that.
Can.
If they're that desperate to get another Swallow. But
how about we give him Nick Maxwell then?
Oh, don't even start. Damon, continue.
You did mention Tarrant. I think he might be one. You know, they've got Petrie down there still. They've got Aaron Black. And who's the other one? Lockie Hansen.
Yep.
So I think they might be able to give up a key tall, which I think Gold Coast, as we just said, they're in need of a key forward. Mm-hmm. So Tarrant and maybe a pick. What's their first pick going to be for North?
That's going to be pick eight. So they're going to basically the father son bidding starts before the free agency and trade period starts. So any picks that are taken then, they're locked in and frozen and they can't be used. So they can't even trade for another pick before to take a father son with.
And Gold Coast are going to screw them over with this because they want.
Gold Coast have already made it pretty clear that they're going to bid for
Luke McDonald
and because they would take him any day of the week. That's the sort of player that they need. They need a good rebounding defender.
Mm. Yep. And just on the other draftees they could be looking at, don't think he'll slide, but if he is still there, they'll definitely get him. Matt Schoenberg.
Yep. I can't see him going at five. Yeah. But
four maybe, not five.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see him slipping at four, but. Mm.
Yeah, he's a super talent, play a variety of roles, down back, up forward, and is a strong marking target and quite a playmaker. Other player, Darcy Gardner. I was reading up on him and he's widely tipped to be, the best key position player in the draft, which do you agree?
He definitely is. He's the best key defender in the championships, but it's a bit like the Plowman situation last year with the GWS. Mm. Lachie Plowman didn't play a game last year in the championships with a busted arm and elbow.
Yep.
But I sort of had him around that 10-ish mark, 10, at least maybe dropping to 8, and he went at pick 3. So on a needs basis, they could probably take him there. I'd probably have Jack Billings.
Yep.
Ooh,
Jack Billings.
Well, I reckon, for Gold Coast, they haven't got that player for mine that plays that prolific half-forward role. Look, I know Matera is more of a small forward, but Jack Billings plays high half-forward, and he's around that 180-ish height, but he goes in the midfield and he's just so elusive. He's got so much X factor. He rips games apart. Mm. People have probably pushed him back up the order, down the order, because he's sort of that, in limbo sort of player. He's not a designated forward. He's not a designated midfielder either. But in terms of development, he's going to be a very scary prospect. So if they get him at pick 5, they're going to have an absolute talent on their hands.
Yep. Another one I thought of was Ben Lennon.
Yeah. It's probably his consistency for mine's probably his biggest issue.
Mm.
And that's something we see. I mean, for example, on the weekend, he kicked one goal and had a few possessions and nothing that impacted the game. But on the flip side, the week before, he had 25 disposals, 4 goals, and won the Knights the game off his own boot pretty much. So it's his best and worst are so far apart at the moment. But I still think he'll probably be up around that 6, 7, 8. He'll go top 10 without a doubt. It's just where he'll go. But Gold Coast could do worse than draft him as well. I like that one.
Yep. Mm. And that about wraps it up. And we're heading straight into another interview with Zach Milbank, who is the Media and Publications Coordinator at the Sandful and was formerly a chief writer at the Adelaide Advertiser. So let's delve into it. Here's Zach. So we're joined by a very special guest, Zach Milbank. Zach, thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me. Not a problem.
And you spent a long time at the Advertiser over in Adelaide before making the shift to the Sandful earlier in the year. How's the new role treating you, and has it been sad to leave behind the role at the Addy?
Yeah, it was a little bit sad. Been there 13 years and really enjoyed my time there and had a wonderful lot of opportunities, and travelling on the road as an AFL writer certainly can be quite rewarding at times and also challenging. But, just felt the time was right to move on and challenge myself in another manner, and the position at the SANFL's arrived, and it's been fantastic this year. I've really enjoyed myself.
Mm-hmm. And you've had the pleasure of following the South Australian side around the country this year, and it must be a nice feeling knowing that the boys took home the championship for the first time since 1995.
Yeah, it was an absolutely great privilege and honour to be involved, actually. I'd obviously covered it from the other side of the fence at the Advertiser, and to be inside the inner sanctum was a real buzz from my point of view, to be able to travel with the team and sat on the bench on game day, the last match against Western Australia at Eddie Had Stadium, and was able to be involved with the boys in the rooms afterwards and celebrate. It was a fantastic experience and really great for South Australian football to finally break that drought.
And we'll kick things off by asking you about the current draft crop that you obviously know so well coming through this year. And most people in Victoria are pretty well across the board with the bigger names such as Aish, Dunstan, Schoenberg, Reynolds and Harvey. But do you think there are any other players that could really make a big splash in, say, the top 30-odd this year in the draft?
Yeah, I do. I think there's two that spring to mind, and they're both playing really good SANFL league footy. The first would be Nord's Trent Dumont, who was actually an AIS AFL Academy holder from South Australia. He's a really strong-bodied midfielder. You speak to Nathan Bassett, and he absolutely raves about him. He's been playing some really solid league footy the last 4 or 5, 6 weeks since the carnival finished, and he looks like he's going to maintain his place in Nord's league team entering the SANFL league finals. And Bassett actually, it's a big rap, but Bass actually likens him to a Dane Swan just in terms of the way he moves. He's sort of unconventional, but gets the job done and finds a bit of the footy, and as I say, a mature body certainly helps him adapt to league footy. And speaking of mature bodies, that's the other guy who would be worth keeping an eye out for, and that's James Battersby from Sturt. Much like Trent Dumont, he's played a lot of league football this year, and he's found the footy with an element of ease. And he uses the ball really well. He's a very smart decision maker with a lot of poise. And we saw that in the under-18 carnival when he kicked a couple of really important goals at crucial junctures against WA in that final match.
And, look, I've seen quite a bit of Azaro Fantasia over the years at Norwood down there. And I'm a big rap for his creativity as a small forward. Can you tell us a bit more about him for the people out there that probably don't know so much about him?
Yeah, he's only a little fella. He's from Paynham Nord Union Football Club over here in South Australia, which has been a big feeder to the Nord Football Club. He's played a bit of senior footy this year. He played a couple of Foxtel Cup, or he played their one Foxtel Cup game. And then he's played about 3 or 4 league matches this year, including round 22. He actually had a career-high 24 touches and played really well, but he missed out on the weekend with an ankle injury, a minor one. So it'll be interesting to see if he can get back his place in the league team for the second semi-final, but there'll be a big crush on for spots there. But as you say, he's a very creative page, and he also he loves to chase and tackle as well, which we know is vital for a small forward.
And look, there's a lot of uncertainty for mine for where I would probably place Darcy Horrigan in this year's draft. Especially, I like him to a lot of a team memory last year. He's a fanatic tackler, great hands, beautiful set shot, and just an incredible presence up forward. But I feel as though perhaps when he has to play that higher role, maybe up into a wing, it's where his endurance is sort of, I guess it's a bit exposed. And I mean, he has been trialled down back a little bit, but he's played more of that role up forward. What do you think holds for him at the next step at the AFL?
It is a really interesting one for sure. Obviously, he's used as that sort of lead-up forward at the carnival, but for South Adelaide, he sort of found himself pigeonholed in the reserves, and he only got a league game in the last game of the season when Ron Fuller was moved on as the senior coach. The caretaker, Kim Cobb, gave him a berth, and he kicked a couple of goals in the last game, which was promising. But, yeah, you're right, Paige. He is almost stuck in the middle there. I'm not sure what the future holds. Obviously, he's going to have to knuckle down and try and work out whether he can develop a bit of an aerobic capacity to work up as a big-bodied midfielder, or someone who can perhaps almost go in and have the odd spurt through the middle. But whether or not he's got that capacity, I'm not sure. But he's certainly got a lovely, clean hands and a really raking long left-foot kick and a really accurate set shot for goal.
And on the mature age player front, Joel Tippett and Nathan Gordon have been delisted from their AFL clubs in the past few years, but they've had great years in the Sandful. Do you think they've got a decent chance of getting drafted, especially if Joel Tippett went to Adelaide? What do you think the reaction would be there?
Yeah, it would certainly be very interesting. I don't think they're very forgiving the Crows fans for what went on, as we all know, but I think they'd be forgiving if they actually saw what he can produce, and he's a very dour defender. He doesn't give his man a sniff. He's been very consistent again this year, Joel. And no doubt the Crows will be looking at him because they've got to replace Ben Rutten very soon. He's only just signed a one-year deal, and Daniel Carley is there, but they really do need to boost those big man stocks down back. On Nathan Gordon, if you had have asked me in July, I would have said he'd be a very good chance, but his second half of the season, he's actually faded a bit. His numbers aren't anywhere near as high, and his form hasn't been good, and also North Adelaide's form's tailed off. They've lost their last five matches in a row, so he has been invited to the National Combine, though, so that's promising for him.
And with the free agency period, you know, being really important in the past few years, obviously the Crows have big draft sanctions against them. Are there any big names that you see linked with them, and how do you think they'll approach that?
Yeah, well, Eddie Betts is the big one that's been talked about quite freely over here. They may be looking to make a bit of a splash. I think they're keen for a small forward. They were certainly made their intention known that they were in the market for Mark Lacroix a couple of months back before Lacroix re-signed with West Coast, but... So that wasn't to be, but yeah, I think they intend on making a bit of a play for Eddie Betts, so watch this space.
And outside of free agency as well, do you think they have any players with currency that they could use to trade back into the first or second rounds?
Sean McKernan's the one who's been mentioned freely over here in South Australia. Obviously, he's a Victorian boy and may have a bit of currency with some Victorian clubs over there. Obviously, he can play a numerous amount of roles in the ruck and up forward and very versatile. But it will be interesting to see what develops there. A couple of others who have been mentioned, Ricky Henderson and David McKay, who obviously very promising players and both from Victoria as well, could be thrown into a package. Obviously, with Paul Roos coming into Melbourne, it was interesting to note the other day that he said pick number two was philosophically on the table, and no doubt the Crows' ears would have pricked up at that, and knowing that if they could get their hands on it, it could open the door to selector James Aish or Matt Scharenberg.
That is massive. Now, look, Port Adelaide, they would have been laughed at by the entire of South Australia last year, especially by the Adelaide fans. Now, they've gone from a basket case club now into a semi-final defending the Pies last week. Obviously, with Hinkley, Koshy and Burgess taking over the helm at Port Adelaide. What apart from that, what do you think's been part of the turnaround there at Alberton this year?
Yeah, well, it's funny you say, Paige. I think it was either going to go one or two ways after the sad passing of John McCarthy, and it was just this week a year has passed since his tragic death, and I think that's really helped to galvanise the group. They've sort of been one in, all in, and I think they've really used that as a bit of a motivator this year, and that's been played a fairly strong part in their resurgence. But you do say that the three guys you mentioned there, Hinkley, Burgess and Koch, have all obviously had significant roles to play, and it's really been the Cinderella story over here in SA and a fantastic footy story. And may the run continue. It's great for South Australian footy.
And, look, you were also heavily involved with the 2012 state side last year. Can you tell us why Brody Grundy slipped down to pick 18, do you think?
I think it was purely a needs thing. I think if I remember following the draft closely in my capacity at the Advertiser last year, and a lot of the clubs that were picking before Collingwood grabbed him at 20 sort of didn't really need a ruckman or wasn't really high on their priority at the time. But yeah, you're right, it is amazing that he did slip that deep. And I know when he played that game on the Friday night a couple of weeks back when he was outstanding, I sort of put a tweet out that night actually and said, how the heck did this guy slip
you
to
did,
number
yep.
20? So, yeah, staggering stuff, but good luck to the Pies. They've got him, and yeah, it's allowed them to make a call like they have today in delisting Darren Jolly.
And speaking of recent draftees from South Australia, Jared Pollock and Jimmy Tumpas, I'd say similar sort of players in that they're really damaging on the outside, but their impact at AFL level has been a bit down from what their under-18 form was like, as well as, you know, their senior form in the Sandful. What do you think that is?
I think injuries has played a huge part with both of them, particularly Pollock. That's sort of hampered him a little bit. I know he was probably thought of a bit more highly than a Brody Smith, both from the same footy club over here in Woodville, West Torrens, and Smith's really gone on with it at the Crows, and Pollock hasn't in Brisbane. There's been a bit of talk he may be a bit of homesick, but I think he's still got a lot of quality. He's a long left foot kick and can run and carry the footy, which is obviously a good quality to have at AFL level. And Tumpas, I think, just be patient there. Obviously, a very difficult year at Melbourne. We've seen Jack Trengove, another South Australian, battle there in trying circumstances. But mark my words, he can play. He's played a lot of senior football here in SA for the Eagles and was really outstanding for them in some finals as well. So watch out. When he gets his body right, he'll be right.
And lastly, do you think Port fans are going to take over the town if they get over Geelong this weekend?
I think you could be right. Yeah, they certainly like having a run while the Crows fans are sitting idle with their team out of September. So the tables have turned on last year and they're loving it.
Great. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us, Zach. We really appreciate it, and we'll have to get back in contact with you towards the draft in November.
Not a problem, guys. I look forward to it.
And that was Zach Milbank there. Great to have a quick chat with him. Now we're going to go straight into West Coast and their off-season review, or their on-season review. In 2013, massive disappointment. I had them in the grand final.
So did I. Yeah. I had them taking home the minor premiership.
Mm. I had them for the premiership.
Yeah, basically. I mean, they got the prelim final last year, and that was on the back of a few pretty bad injuries as well. So you thought, surely, you know, when these injuries go away, they can, you know, really make a fist of the big time, and they didn't make the eight, which is huge disappointment. Only 9 wins, and this is the biggest shocker for mine. Only 3 at home.
I know.
3 wins at Subiaco against.
How many do they have this year? Was it 11 or 12 home games they had there? Because nine times out of 10, well, this year we all pin them for winning each of those. Maybe one against Freo they drop, but.
Yeah. I mean, they only beat the Dogs, the Kangas and the Suns.
Oh, you're joking. Is that it?
Yeah. And they really failed to deliver on their preseason hype. But the players that did improve, Josh Kennedy had a great start to the year, kicked 60 goals to come fourth in the Coleman. And he was awarded with All-Australian selection, as well as Eric McKenzie, who was a massively underrated defender.
Him. Absolutely love him.
People are like, oh, why isn't Jake Carlisle in the AA team? Because he was a worse defender than Eric McKenzie, that's why. But yeah, he did have a career best year on par with Harry Taylor and Scott D. Thompson, who also made the AA squad. Hopefully he makes the actual team because he definitely deserves it.
He's been very, very deserving in that
I think
position.
He's been the best defender all year.
And the most consistent.
Yeah, and a couple of their midfielders also had breakout years. Chris Maston, and Scott Selwood. They had impressive individual showings on personal form. They had career best years, maybe not as a contributing for the team, but stats-wise, they definitely did. But the problem with West Coast this year was basically gelling together as a cohesive unit. I mean, it seemed like there was some sort of dissent within the group. Daniel Kerr was left to rot in the waffle for a while.
He was, yeah.
Despite being healthy for the first time in, you know, ages, because he seems to always be injured.
He did have those injuries towards the end of the year.
But in mid-year, he didn't really have that. And you could say that maybe Worsfold made a statement by keeping Kerr at waffle level. Maybe there was something to do with the game plan that they didn't like or something like that. But something was clearly off at West Coast. I mean, when you've got a great spine with Nick Nat, who obviously was injured for some time, Jack Darling, Josh Kennedy, Eric McKenzie, Darren Glass.
Dean Cox.
There's something very, very wrong if that spine can't get you into the top eight. So hopefully Nat
Andrew Gaff for me was one who...
Oh, big disappointment.
Was
yeah.
just... I really pinned him for a massive year. Mm. And he just didn't get going from the start, and he didn't get out of first gear in the entire season. Mm. I thought this was going to be a year for him where he was really going to stamp himself on the competition, especially given how good of an outside player he is. He doesn't get enough exposure, or he isn't spoken about as much in Melbourne. Mm. I mean, they rate him highly in the West, but...
Tag him and he goes to nothing. That's the
thing. That's probably his biggest downfall, is that he does roll over with a bit of a tag, so... Mm.
Yeah, that hopefully he has a better year next year. Really works on shaking the tag in the preseason. And Nick Nat, I really hope he gets over his groin soreness in the preseason.
That was probably a big thing for them. Start of the year, end of the year, middle of the year.
Mm. And they had a few retirements as well, with Embley, Hams, Nikoski and Adam Selwood all hanging up the boots.
Brad Dick as well,
yeah. So that's nearly 600 games of experience gone.
Did you mention Kerr there as well?
I think he was not offered a new contract rather than retiring. I think that was it.
I'm not sure what the go was. All I remember hearing is that he wasn't getting any belief that he could overcome injuries as well as he could. So to me, that sounded like he's retired. But I believe that he wasn't offered a new deal either.
Yeah. And they've got pick 6 in the draft, so it's uncertain as to what they'll do with this. They could use it for a trade or take a pick, because they really rate Dom Sheed, as you would. He won the Lark medal in the championships. So, you know, with the top 5 or 6 players being amazing quality, they'll try and keep it. But they really want Reece Conker. They really, really do. They may have to part with pick 6, with Conker being a pick six in his draft year in 2010.
It's a like for a like, I do
it. It is, but I don't know. Speaking to Eagles fans, they don't seem all that eager to part with it. They're like, oh, we rated him at pick 10. Well, tough. You know,
he didn't go at pick 10.
And midfield depth is really what the Eagles need, as well as some speed.
That's their biggest downfall.
Yeah, based around Matthew Pridis. He's never going to be a speedster at all. Even Dom Sheed, he doesn't have the pace. That's probably his one weakness. So
could that be a reason why they overlook him? Because there's becoming, I mean, the jungle drums are beating, and I love him.
Mm.
The only thing is a lot of draft experts, have got him now pushing out to the mid-teens based on the fact that he's got zero speed. But I don't know how you'd really be able to justify that considering, I mean, I've seen him kick goals from all over the park for WA. And
Frio would snap him up if he got that far.
Look, you'd be crazy not to take him.
Mm.
And especially given he's a local lad.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you?
Exactly. And they've got all these worries with, you know, Scott Selwood rumoured to be going back to Victoria.
That's a big one.
That's a very big one. And Elliot Yeo is another one that I think that Brisbane are trying to push and finalise contract extension for him. But maybe they could get in his ear one last time and try and coax him over, because he is a WA boy. So
he was picked 30 in the draft a couple of years ago. So I really rate him a bit higher than pick 30, but slipped to 30 to Brisbane's luck. But what have West Coast got to
give up?
To give up.
I've got a few. Callum Sinclair could be traded. I think he wants to go back to Melbourne, though, so that wouldn't really help the prospect with Brisbane. I mean, he's fourth in line behind Cox, Nick Nat and Scott Lyson.
Might work out for Brisbane, considering they're probably about to lose Billy Longer.
Could, yeah. And, you know, you've got Ash Smith, who hasn't really got a game consistently all through the year, so he should be a late pick, similar to maybe a Kobe Stevens.
I mean, he's taken over the Tom Swift role.
Yeah, with the hair.
Crap hair and crap tattoos. It's all happening.
Matt Rose is a free agent, so he could go somewhere with limited opportunities at senior level. And Scott Selwood is the big one. If Melbourne could somehow manufacture a way to get him, hopefully not lose pick two, but I don't think they could get him any other way.
No, they'd have to pay overs for him.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, that would definitely improve Melbourne, but you don't want to be losing this midfield depth.
Look, I'd say he's a captain. He's a captain material.
Yeah, definitely. And at West Coast or at Melbourne, that's the thing.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. So you want to keep him. They clearly highly rate him. So West Coast will pay big bucks if they're going to want to keep him. But yeah, it's going to be tough, and it's going to be some pretty intense negotiations, in my opinion. But in the draft, they really want to target midfielders, especially speedy ones, with the exception obviously being Dom Sheed, since he is a local boy. But you've also got Blake Akers. Nathan Freeman is one that I really think you could pick up. Similar to Paddock Dangerfield is what you've always said, Paige, with Freeman there.
Yeah, and definitely. He's a Dangerfield type.
Yeah,
and great burst of speed. Takes the game on.
And I know there's a convention to go towards the more tall midfielder role, but you've got Jacob Chisari and Ben Cavara, who have both won the Morris Medal joint winners with two others there, who are...
Chisari will be next year's draft from...
Are you sure? I'm pretty sure he could go this year, yeah.
We'll double-check that one.
Yeah, but no, he's been great, and... you know, they really provide that burst of speed that West Coast really need, as well as a person that's been overlooked year after year, Shane Nelson, who he racks it up in the waffle. And I think with Gaff getting so much attention, if you had a second player that's Gaff-like, that would really help to give West Coast more ball use and really push the ball forward and make them top eight material next year.
Quick, we're moving on to the semi-final review of the TAC Cup on the weekend. Two games. The first one kicking off between the Calder Cannons and the Western Jets, which was always going to be a good game after the Western Jets' big comeback last week over the Bush Rangers. The Calder Cannons ran out 16-11, 107 winners against the Jets, 10-12, 72. And for me, look, it was a bit of an interesting match because quite a few of the Jets boys were probably not as effective as they were the week before. Iacarano had that shoulder injury and played through it, but really wasn't as influential. Sort of brought them back into the game into the third quarter, but by then it was probably all too late and out of the reach of the Jets. And Jake Greaser, I don't know what was up with him on the weekend, but he really wasn't at his prolific best. Now, he's a stoppage specialist and someone who really propels the Jets forward. And he probably really struggled on the weekend, didn't have that influence like we know he's had all year. But look, in their absence, I thought that One player for mine, Brett Brearley, was absolutely fantastic. He's such a big-bodied player. It's not really until you get up close to him that you see how much of a big player he is. The number one for the Western Jets now. I thought his game was exceptional. He played a really good role through the midfield and pushing forward. And James Sicily was basically... had to stay up forward for the majority of the match. He really couldn't move out of the forward 50 and was their main target going forward, which probably cost them in a way because his creativity and his flow that he basically creates really meant that the Jets couldn't get a run on that they really wanted. But look, on the Cannons point of view, Jake Owen, he had the tough task of trying to hold down big Paddy McCartan last week against the Falcons, and he struggled all day. But... look, this week he was back to his best natural game, free-flowing, rebounding from half-back, pushing onto a wing, and then he pushed forward for a really good goal. He just had an exceptional game. He'll definitely go in the draft this year, exceptional talent there. And Essendon New South Wales ACT scholarship holder Jed Clothier had another great game, 24 disposals, took some really strong marks, kicked a good goal, and he was really pivotal in their win. And Couchy for mine was a big win as well. He that small, annoying forward was really in the face of the Jets players all day. And look, the Cannons, I'm probably going to fancy them just against the Stingrays this week. Ooh. In the prelim. And I'll be calling that match on TAC Cup Radio. So that one I'm very, very, very excited for, especially if I'm down on the boundary doing that game, because feathers are going to fly, I'd say.
Mm. And the second game was the Eastern Rangers against the Northern Knights, with the Eastern Rangers coming out 19-point victors, 14-12-96 to 10-17-77. So after they had a massively disappointing loss last week, I would say, for the Eastern Rangers. I mean, they came second in the ladder at the end of the home and away season, but just a really disappointing game last week. But it was a high-scoring affair this week. They really were able to capitalise on their opportunities, moving them into the prelim final against the Geelong Falcons, which is going to be an absolutely massive game.
Yeah, it's going to be huge.
Especially given the home and away match that they played, where Eastern Rangers absolutely dominated the Falcons. They kept them to 2-9, I believe, which was absolutely ridiculous.
They're the only side that matches up extremely well against the Falcons.
Yeah, definitely. And what's even more impressive about the victory was that they did it without Mitch Honeychurch, which is a great ball magnet, and Tom Boyd, who's likely going to go number one in the draft, or should, just based on
He could be
talent.
Back this week as well.
Ooh.
There's a few murmurs we've heard from TAC Cup Radio that he is... probably thereabouts for the prelim this week.
Oh, that'd be
which
good.
Just makes the matchup even more tantalising.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously the Rangers got off to a great start. They kicked four of the first five goals. Ben Cavara had an absolutely outstanding game in the midfield.
Needed to after last week.
Yeah,
so.
Really in and under. Mitch Keedle was great on the outside, and the finishing of Michael Apnis and Christian Petrecca. Am I saying that right?
Petrarca, depending on who you speak to.
Yep, and they kicked three goals apiece, Apnis and Petrarca, and Apnis finished the third quarter with a couple of clutch goals, and that really solidified the Rangers' lead. But at the end, it was the goal-kicking accuracy that decided the result, because the Knights had actually one more scoring shot than the Rangers, and you know that was obviously the difference in the end. But we shouldn't discount the individual efforts of several Knights players. Jake Collange, Billy Murphy had great bursts of speed
and
agility. Yeah, it was really great to see. And they had a short turnaround from their elimination final last week compared to the Eastern Rangers, but Josh Turner and Matthew Haynes had a great game as well. They showed plenty of footy smarts and composure, racked up a lot of touches, excuse me, and Marcus Bontempelli was also really impressive up forward. He clunked a few really strong marks, and he showed his versatility, which is going to be great for recruiters to look at and really look at... because, you know, these days you really want more than one position, and Bontempelli has shown that he can do great work in the midfield.
Gives you a lot of versatility.
Yeah, definitely. But, yeah, that was it for the the Rangers and the Knights.
Sad for the Knights. I mean,
sad for the Knights,
they
yeah.
were... they'd be cursing themselves because they had, as you said, more set shots on goal and were so wasteful in the first half.
Yeah.
They were just horrible. And they... how many points did they kick in the end?
17.
So that's just a horrible turnaround. They quite literally would have won that game if they had... And the funny thing was they kicked six goals in the first half and then kicked six goals basically in the last quarter.
Yeah.
They kicked more goals in the last quarter than they did collectively for the entire match, you'd say.
Yeah.
So it was a bit of a shame from that point of view.
But at least we get to see the Rangers and the Falcons this week.
That'll be a fantastic matchup, and that's going to be on Saturday at 11 o'clock at Visy Park, followed by the Dandenong Stingrays v the Calder Cannons at 2 o'clock. And you can listen on the Red Time iPhone app or via the TAC Cup website, which is taccup.com.au, and listen to TAC Cup Radio.
And listen to Paige.
I'll be on there.
And but really quickly, something else happened on a Saturday, the past Saturday. Actually, it was the Morrish Medal, and there were it was a historic night because four joint winners on 16
Never
votes each.
Never been done before.
No, Jacob Chisari, Ben Kavara, George Cameron, and Josh Scott from Bendigo, Eastern Ranges, Geelong, and Gippsland, respectively. Joint winners. I mean, they all had great years. I mean, Chisari was named in the best players basically every week.
Yep. Incredibly, very well done considering the year that Bendigo had, and they struggled all year.
Definitely, and he got the Pioneers Best and Fairest Award last year as a bottom age player under the tutelage of Ollie Wines. He's obviously now at Port, yep. So he's really obviously learned a lot on him. The only knock on him is his height. He's only 175 centimetres, so he might have a tougher time being drafted, but if we've seen with Dion Prestia this year, height doesn't
Blair,
mean everything.
You've got Nathan Rovat.
Yeah. Yep. Height isn't everything anymore. There's definitely a place for small midfielders in the modern competition, and that same thing can be applied to Ben Kavara as well. He's only 173. He makes his disposals count, and that's the big thing about Ben Kavara.
He's a stoppage specialist.
Yeah. In mine, I want to compare him similar to Lewis Jetta and Cyril Rioli melded together. Obviously not that much class, but he's got Rioli's low centre of gravity and his great agility, and he's got Lewis Jetta's speed, and he's got that inside ability as well. So I'm not sure who else to...
If he was just a little bit more cleaner with his disposal, he'd probably be the complete player.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously he's very team-oriented as well. I mean, he can obviously...
And he's the captain of the Rangers,
yeah,
especially with, you know, Honeychurch, Boyd, Apness, McStay, those sorts of guys that are at that club.
Yeah, and he can dodge five players at once, but he generally doesn't tend to do that just because he's such a team player and he wants to set an example for his team.
Yep.
So any club that drafts him is obviously going to be very happy. And how about the good news story of George Cameron? He missed out on being drafted last year because of some pretty bad stress fractures in his back. But that sidelined him for basically the second half of the season. But thankfully, the Falcons took him on as a top-age player so he could play again this year, and he's obviously rewarded them again with the Morrish medal.
He was also one... I'd probably argue that he was best on ground for the Geelong Falcons. Last week in their qualifying final against Calder, he and probably Reid Adams for me, but... I'm so happy for him.
Yeah, I can't see a reason for him not to go in the second or third rounds in the draft, to be honest. I think he's a real bolter for mine. He's shown that he can really perform in pressure situations. Hopefully he can pull up for the prelim final because he actually was ill on the night, so he wasn't able to attend the Morrish Medal night. But the Falcons will really be looking to avenge that huge loss that they had against the Eastern Rangers earlier in the year. And last but not least, Josh Scott. A forward winning a medal for
leading goal kicker.
Yeah, leading goal kicker and named as the on the field in the TAC Cup Team of the Year. So three awards on the one night. So not a bad haul for Josh Scott there. And he may be a bit undersized as a key forward. He's only 190.
He is. It's when you look at that, and this is what I love about the Morrish Medal, is that although you've got the star-studded players who, you know, AIS kids, they're private school footy kids, and they've played, obviously, state representative stuff, when you've got those four there who, well, Josh Scott had one cap. The others, well, Kavara had two. Chisari had none, and Cameron had none as well. All of them were initially not invited to the national combine as well. So that just says a lot about just how good their years have been in the absence of some serious stars. Obviously, Joshy got the call up during the week that he'd be invited to the national combine, which he's rapped about. And as I'm sure you're going to get on to, our mate Louis Herbert got the coaches award at the TAC Cup, which I am just so pleased for.
It was a great night. We spoke to Louis Herbert last week on the show, and he was absolutely wrapped with it, and it was great to see. I mean, with these players being invited to the combine now, based on achievements and all that sort of thing, it's really going to be interesting to see how the recruiters really look at these at their bare talents, rather than because you can't really simulate a football environment at the combine. It's basically raw athletic talent with a bit of, you know, obviously the clean hands.
It's all that testing sort of stuff, trying to fine-tune attributes that a player has, and that's obviously the kicking skills, the goal kicking, the clean hands test, obviously 3K time trial, you know, beep test. Mm.
You know, agility, leap.
So yep, vertical leap, running leap, you know, all that
repeat
sort of stuff.
Sprinting,
so yep, yeah. So it's more about what you're going to see in an athlete rather than what they can produce for you. If you could test for pressure situations, you'd probably be a millionaire.
Be a lot better, and the players really do put a high emphasis on the specific things that they're going to be tested on, even if they don't have an application at AFL level specifically. They know that this is the thing that the recruiters really take note of, and you know, it could be make or break whether you get drafted or not.
A bit like Dean Towers last year. Mm. He stood out in obviously the repeated sprints and that sort of stuff, and ended up being taken at pick 16 to the Swans.
Yeah, so definitely. And that's about it for this week on Off-Season Radio. But we've got a big weekend coming up with AFL finals between... Who's Carlton playing, Damon?
We are playing...
Sydney,
yes. So,
going to be interesting.
Port Adelaide and Geelong
with... Corey Enright failing to overturn his reprimand, which is pretty selfish in my opinion. Why wouldn't you just take the carryover points and
who
then
knows?
Play?
I don't know. I don't understand the psychology.
Maybe
in that
he wants to whack someone from Port. He's eyeing someone off.
Who knows? And we've also got the TAC Cup finals with Dandenong coming up against Calder and the Eastern Rangers coming up against Geelong. So it's going to be a very, very big weekend.
Prelim weekend for the TAC Cup, followed by the grand final next week at Etihad Stadium.
It's going to be huge, and we're going to be there.
We will be. We'll be there. And look, next week's episode, we've got some big... we've got some big guests. We're going to have
Mitch
Harvey on from North Adelaide. We're going to have Dwayne Wilson from Sturt and Zach Webster, the brother of Jimmy Webster from St Kilda, from Glenorchy. And we're also going to be kicking off our very first Phantom Draft, which is going to go for the first round at the moment. So that will be something to tune in for definitely next week. But until then...
I would say go Tigers, but we're out. So.
I'd say go Pies, but we're out. Enjoy preseason.
Well, in that case, everyone can barrack for Carlton.
I don't think so. That's it. We're done.
Go Sydney.
Go Freo.